Welcome to the Mindfield podcast with your hosts, Kiri and Alexi. For those who haven't joined us before, a massive welcome and thank you for taking the time to listen. Now, the aim of the podcast is very simple. We're here to try and open up conversations around mental health. We interview all sorts of guests that include the famous and the not so famous. Season one saw us host professional sportsmen, psychiatrists, entrepreneurs, artists, musicians, as well as very straightforward, everyday people. Now, they all offer a unique take on what mental health is to them, how they've overcome their problems in the past, and how they've led a happy and successful life, even whilst battling their inner demons. They tell us how they have navigated their very own minefields. We're moving on to season two, and it has more of the same. Although our recording studio is off limits for now, we're now in a podcast recording via Zoom in the age of social distancing, and we really appreciate you bearing with us if we do have any technical problems or if it sounds slightly odd. We are doing our best. Today we welcome Charlotte Richard, part-time social media influencer and brand ambassador for Fidacity, an online marketplace promoting Shop Local. She's a lover of wildlife and particularly elephants, and she works for the non-profit organisation The Elephant Family. She's amassed over 100,000 followers on Instagram and has seen both the good and the dark side of social media, including one particularly unsavoury incident that she'll be addressing a little later on the pod. Now, given Char's status and experience as an influencer and brand ambassador, we thought it would be worthwhile for today's pod to focus on social media, its relationship with our mental health, and how we can get the most out of it. Char, welcome to the podcast. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Good. We might be hundreds of miles away from each other, but I can hear you all loud and clear, and it's also good to see your face. Look, we don't want to waste too much time, and hopefully we've introduced you there reasonably accurate, but since this is our first podcast recording during quarantine, we thought we'd start with a little quick fire round to ease things in based on lockdown and quarantine. So we're just going to fire a few questions at you, and I think our listeners and we can get to know you a little bit better through seeing how you're surviving quarantine. I mean, the first one we have is your top tip for surviving lockdown and quarantine.
Getting outside. Definitely getting the sun and the vitamin D when you can. Also, living in the UK, it's quite irregular, so taking advantage of it when it does come out is my saving grace, I think.
I like that. And of course, not for more than your half an hour prescribed every day, but no.
Not for more than your half hour, but get that half hour, because
make the most of an hour now.
It's an hour, depending on your fitness levels.
But if, yeah, obviously. And yeah. Even, you know, if you have a balcony, if you have like a big window that you can open, even that, just getting that vitamin D, I think is super important.
I also think the weather has been slightly torturing us. We had the wettest February on record here in the UK. And as soon as we're locked in and we've seen blue skies every single day. It's painful.
Not a cloud in the sky. It's unbelievable.
Okay, good. No, thank you. That's really good. Your first meal post quarantine.
Oh boy.
You're a vegetarian, aren't you?
I'm a vegetarian. I'm a borderline vegan. I'm like an 80% vegan. Right off the bat is Picky Wops pizza, which is the best vegan pizza, because okay. That is something I can't make here. We've been cooking a lot, so there are certain things that I can kind of get my fix for, but that is one thing that I have not been able to get a fix for. So
shout out to Picky Wops in Brixton. They're Brixton.
Yes, right? Christiana. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. The thing you miss the most about life before lockdown?
I feel like at the beginning I was really getting into the isolation, and I think the last week has given me a bit of an itch to be outside. I think the biggest thing for me is just walking around London. It's the reason why I moved here. It's the reason why I fell in love with this city, just seeing, you know, the beautiful streets and everything. And I miss that. I feel so, we're near London, but we're still far away. So I feel like completely just out of the loop of London.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. All right. What has surprised you the most about lockdown? What's been so different from what you expected?
I think how quickly time's been flying by. I feel like at the beginning it started off really slow, and increasingly as the weeks have gone by, like I've been quarantined for 4 weeks now. Yeah. And it's just like, where did that time go? So I think that surprised me, because I thought every day would feel like, you know, what next, what next, what next, and just kind of keeping ourselves entertained. But I guess we have, because it's been flying by.
Okay, perfect. Now, entertainment media. So if lockdown was a song or a film, what would it be? I had some interesting suggestions. You're not allowed to say I Am Legend or 28 Weeks Later. It's got to be something original.
Or Contagion, isn't it? Or Quarantine.
Or Pandemic, yeah.
Wait, sorry, a song or a movie?
Song or a film. What do you think makes you think of... Yeah.
You know what's funny is when we first started this, all I could sing was House Party by Sam Hunt. And I just feel like now everybody's like, it's just all about like being staying in and being an introvert and like finding ways to have fun in the house. And I feel like that's just been like the song of our kind of quarantine.
Nice. Good. Okay. I like it. And my final one, which is actually probably the only practical one other than get outside, is, and you're not allowed to say Tiger King, your Netflix, Amazon Prime, Sky recommendation for all those. Goodness. But it's got to be out of the box. It's got to be something that you wouldn't initially think, oh, definitely go and watch that. And as I said, no Tiger King, no, nothing too obvious.
I'm going to say Rick and Morty, which might not float everyone's, it might not be it for everybody, but truly
definitely not for Kiri.
No, I see the adverts.
But it could be because it's actually quite intellectual. There is a lot of intellect underneath the jokes, you know?
100%.
And I think it's been so much fun. It's our nightly routine now. We just get into a Rick and Morty vortex. So that, I really enjoy that. Obviously, Tiger King, you know.
Just because I'm quite enjoying this as well. And my genuinely last one is, if you could be quarantined with one person, dead or alive, who would it be?
Oh my goodness.
Now you've got to
so
think
hard.
Practically here, because it's almost like, who would you like to be locked on a desert island with as well? It's a similar question.
Jesus. See, what's crazy is my go-to is like Marilyn Monroe, just because I'd love to like chill with her and talk to her and pick her brain.
But I don't think she'd be that useful in quarantine.
I don't think she'd be that useful, yeah. No. Probably like Will Smith.
Entertaining.
I don't know. I feel like he's entertaining. He's useful. He's strong. He's clever.
Yeah. Will Smith a la sort of I Am Legend as opposed to maybe Bad Boys. Sort of
maybe
thing.
He's on the forefront of my brain because you just said I Am Legend. But like, you know, The Rock or someone like that. Someone who can lift heavy things.
Like the most powerful person in the world, yeah. It's not bad.
Future president of the United States.
Tony Robbins!
Well.
Yeah, hopefully.
Ooh, Tony Robbins. I would pick Tony Robbins.
Okay. And actually, that's a good one for Out of the Box
on
Netflix.
One-on-one.
It's a very good one for Out of the Box on Netflix. I'm not a...
Guru
on Netflix by Tony Robbins is brilliant. Okay, good. Now we've got that out of the way, and I think we hopefully understand you a little bit better now. I want to get to the main sort of meat of the podcast, and I don't think you can really have a conversation nowadays about young people's mental health without in some form or way coming onto social media. It dominates most parts of our lives, whether we're at school, university, or working. You know, there's social media for work on LinkedIn. There's social media for when you're doing nothing. There's social media for when you're organizing things, you know, Facebook. To an extent, WhatsApp is virtually social media or is owned by a social media company. And we haven't actually had anyone on the show who's been really into their social media to the point where I think they understand it, or at least they have to manage it. And what I want to talk to you about is managing anxiety and the mental health implications that come with being heavily involved with social media. Because I don't think there's an escaping it. And I think some people would advocate that you just ignore it or you stay away from social media. But I don't think that's also healthy. I think you need to be involved partly. And look, before I blabber on for ages, it'd be really interesting to get your thoughts on how you have a healthy relationship with social media.
I think, as with everyone, it ebbs and flows. And it is hard to strike a balance with it and find what is enough but what is not too much. And for me, I've always found sometimes, especially when you're scrolling kind of mindlessly and you're not going on with a purpose and you're just kind of going on to just absorb, it can be such a vortex and you get sucked into, like, you know, you're watching your friend's cousin's like aunt's story and you're just like, what am I doing? Like, why am I watching this? Like, this is not, but you just fall into that vortex because they're clever with the algorithm. So you have to be wary. And for me, I think definitely cleaning up your feed, following only accounts that really make you feel happy, make you feel good about yourself. You leave Instagram feeling more positive instead of leaving Instagram feeling like, I want to throw my phone on the other side of the room. So having a mentally healthy feed. And if you can, like, kind of trying to use it as a tool, not so much a toy. That's like, I try my best to do it. Obviously, it's not always easy, but to kind of go on with a purpose, okay, I want to look at this, I want to look at that, and then come off of it, helps, because then you just get sucked in. And I don't know about you guys, but what I find when I'm deep, like watching people's stories, I'm just like, I'm not even living my own life. Like, what am I doing watching everyone else's? Like, I want to go out and, like, sometimes I literally throw my phone because I'm like, like, I just get out of the vortex and I throw it because it's just too much.
But a lot of that is, you know, not, it's not really people's fault. which is what we're hearing more often nowadays. I mean, a lot of these social media companies are pretty much set up with algorithms, as you said, or just with natural, you know, imprints to make you just keep wanting
to
watch more,
to keep you
and
hooked.
More and more. I heard something the other day that it was actually just the switch before the IPOs where they changed when they just before they became public in order, obviously, for the value of the companies to go up. Again, this could be rubbish. That was actually the point where they changed them from this is for the people that want to, you know, scroll through to we are now going to put algorithms that just mean that the content is more and more addictive. And it's just interesting to kind of know that. And I think, you know, have you ever kind of you saying you get annoyed at yourself, you know, for having it? I think one of the things that really helped me was realizing that actually they are using every part of human nature that they know about and using it against you. And we're just all there trying to like...
Of course, you talk about something and you see it in your feed. You know, it's like crazy and how catered it is now to the individual. And I think having like times that you go on your phone and times that you don't is really important. I think the kind of constant lull of a notification, check it right away. Like it's actually addictive. It's like a hit of dopamine to your brain when you get a like or when you get a comment or whatever. So I think like, especially for me, like after I'll post a picture, for example, I put my phone away and I'm like, I don't want to go look at it for another, you know, cause you spend that time, whatever you're editing and posting it. And then I'm just like, I'm done. I want to like leave it. So I think finding time, cause it is a vortex and more we have to be aware of, like sometimes it's not even us. It's Instagram keeping us hooked. So having that designated time and trying not to check it first thing in the morning and last thing before you go to bed. I think that's a big one
that
I'm not perfect on either, but it does. You wake up and it's just like my lifeline and it's like breathe, like start your morning and then check it a little bit later, you know?
Yeah. Okay. To pull you back to something really interesting that you said on cleaning up your feed and, you know, following positive people. I was doing a bit of research before this pod and came across probably the stat that started me the most. I mean, there were loads, you know, they're starting to do more and more research on the implications of social media on people's health. And one that really struck out was 33% of women, so a third of women on Instagram, follow influencers on social media or Instagram, even though they make them feel worse about themselves. I couldn't believe that because it's the sort of modern day equivalent of shooting yourself in the foot or inflicting pain on yourself by something that is so clearly a free choice. And I kind of get it because sometimes you're interested. And I actually think a lot of following our friends leads to fear of missing out or FOMO. It leads to anxiety because we're not there. It leads to anxiety because they have something we don't have. And that's unhealthy. On the subject of influencers, and you are one, I know you don't see yourself as one because you really don't use it as your sort of main lifeline, your main job. But this is slightly controversial, but we're in the age of influencer now, right? We are in this world where we could be at peak influencer. Do you think that influencers, and I think I know what the answer might be, but I'm just interested to hear it. Do you think that influencers have a future as they are now in the world of advertising, media, and social media?
I think that is highly dependent on the individual. I think something that's really important to remember is like influencing and Instagram is only going to work so long as Instagram stays around. So I think a really important thing for influencers is to build a brand off of the social media so that if and when the day comes that Instagram, you know, starts its decline, they have something actually tangible that they've built. So if an influencer has done that, 100%, I think that there could be a future that she could build off. But if it is purely just, you know, kind of hot pictures on Instagram, then I don't know how long that'll last. Also, you know, we're all getting older. Like there's even a younger generation below us. So it depends.
Yes. I think actually, I don't know if this might be what Kiri's asking more, but it's definitely something I want to know. Do you think it's more that the way that influencers have lost trust or gained trust, you know, they are the strength. People are buying more from influencers because they're people that they deem to trust. But do you think that, as Kiri says, it's in the go of it, but do you think there's going to be a slowdown or a speed up? Do you think people are going to basically just have to change and it's the more authentic ones that win? Because I know with you, you know, that's your more long-term game. You know, and the importance of having valuable followers rather than, you know, and people that like you for who you are rather than for a bikini pic, for example. So
yeah,
I'd love to hear your thoughts.
I mean, all influencers, any sort of person who has a following has a social responsibility. That's just like, if you have anyone that's following you, you have a responsibility to put out and be authentic and be genuine. And obviously a lot of people don't always comply with those standards. So I think those types of influencers will probably get weeded out more just due to lack of authenticity, and their followers at a certain point stop kind of buying everything that they're selling, so to speak. So being that, you know, as authentic and genuine as you are, I think that will take influencers definitely further because they actually built a loyal, trusted following. And that's so important. Is, or you're like, you could have a million followers, but how many of them are actually engaged? How many of them actually trust you and believe you and want to buy what you're selling? So having like a warm audience that, you know, you've built over time, it's not overnight, it's really over time. Those influencers will definitely be more successful in, you know, however they divert off of Instagram or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I do feel over time that the word influencer has just got the most terrible rep now.
That's why I don't like being called an influencer. I think it's like, it's such a strong word. You are influencing.
I think it has negative connotations now.
You are influencing.
But it's the new propaganda. It's the new, you remember when subversive messaging, or what's the messaging? Subliminal messaging became sort of watchword for bad advertising or unethical advertising and trying to push products. I actually think that's been replaced now by influencer marketing or whatever you want to call it. And everyone who's been on a TV show once is suddenly an influencer. And it's a very dangerous world.
Everyone
where
and their
we put
mother
trust.
Is an influencer.
Yeah, well, do you think back in the day, people would turn on the 6 o'clock news and that would be their fix every day of what they were being told by someone outside of their immediate group of friends or family. Nowadays, first thing you do when you wake up, as you said, flick on Instagram, and you're getting views and impressions and not news, but genuine views, and you're being influenced by whoever's on the other side of that social media. And that's,
but that's the thing. Everybody has an opinion. Everybody has an opinion. Everybody wants to say something. So if you have a stage to say something, you will say it. Doesn't mean it's accurate. Doesn't mean it's true. But that's kind of the issue that's arises because you have a platform, you feel like you have that power. And I think sometimes people misuse it and use it to spread, you know, false information and fake news and stuff like that. And it's hard because you're like, well, they must be legit. They have a huge following, but then it's like actually like, you know, filtering through. So it is totally.
I think it's so interesting. You know, this point, because I feel like it's like with a lot of things that we like to group people together. Humans naturally, you know, we hear a buzzword, influencer started nice. And then like the media tends to do is they build it up and then they demonize it. And so you get to this point where actually there's just such a spread of good, bad and ugly influencers, in the sense of the good, bad and the ugly, not actual ugly influencers. But it's just sad that actually we have to get to this point where a couple of bad stories come out, you know, a few people have faked what they've done and they haven't checked the products. Like I've seen a few TV programs lately that are debunking, you know, all these guys who don't even look into the companies that they're selling. But I think it's, you know, how do people stop, you know, this kind of negative aspect of an influencer? And maybe does it move on? Does it evolve into something else?
I think you have to be really, really honest with yourself about who you're following. And like, to circle back to the fact you said about like a third of women are following, you know, it's like when you leave, when you put your phone down and you leave feeling worse about yourself, that is more detrimental than you realize. And that impacts you on so many levels. And then you kind of mope around all day and you're just feeling sad because you're looking at these airbrushed, picture perfect influencers that you will never be because they aren't even that, you know? And that's one thing to realize. Really, really important is that a lot of it is a highlight reel. A lot of it is, and we're all guilty of it. It's just your best moments. It's the most picture perfect moments. It's the moments that you want everyone to see and be like, oh, I want that life. Yeah. And now I feel like because of quarantine, it's actually been really interesting because everyone's kind of like, well, we're all on the same playing field right now.
Everyone's
nobody's off to Coachella. Nobody's off to, like, we're all on the same playing field.
Here's your blank room.
We're all just being creative. I think now it's a chance for other people to come out and just be like, listen, like we're doing like, you know, entertaining, funny stuff and just kind of keep the humor. I think it's really important to like remember that these are all things that should be making us like feel happy and better about ourselves. So if you really are following an account that time over time leaves you feeling worse about yourself, you have to unfollow it for your own mental health. I think it's a choice you really have to make.
No, I think monthly purges or annual purges sound like a really good idea for, is this making me feel better? No. Does it tick a box and does it answer the question? No, get rid of it.
A purge of the follow list.
Yeah.
Like, but it's so it's so true because you follow accounts like, you know, even if it's a steady increase, but you never get rid of them.
No, like, it's like Facebook.
No one ever has time to get rid of them. I think it's so important.
I think sometimes people feel bad about unfollowing people. And I think that's also a really important thing to touch on is that people feel like I have some friends, you know, from years and years and years ago. And I do like a monthly sweep. I try to at least. And sometimes I'm just like, I actually like never talk to you, never look at your stuff. Really like I don't know, you know, and it's just kind of being able to not, it's not, like you're not defriended in real life if I unfollowed you, you know, it's, but people take it really personally and I see both sides, but I think you have to make that judgment call for yourself. Like, this is not serving me. This is not making me feel better about myself. I need to just do it, you know, pull the plug.
Yeah. On that, I think it's, you know, if we flip it and now we're looking at the side from, you know, the customers that come and, or fans that come and see, you know, your page or the influencer, it's definitely a big argument of who has the responsibility. You know, I know you've touched upon the fact that influencers have a responsibility to be authentic and let's say respectful, but obviously, you know, influencers are technically like, you know, the, in a sense, the leaders of widening what is okay and not okay in a sense, you know, a bit like people have done in the past. So I just try and work, I wonder how do people balance that in the sense that, you know, if you're someone that comes along and you don't like something, I just find it really weird that people will therefore comment when they actually have nothing to do with that person. And they might just, which is most of the time, it's just a misunderstanding. They don't get their context, which is the same, you know, with a lot of things. But I'm just interested to see how you feel, because last thing I'm going to say is it's the example that I like to tell people. A lot of influencer pages are businesses and there's nothing wrong with that. It should be absolutely fine. I actually think sometimes it's a bit weirder if you use social pages and not use it as a business, because the advantages are there and it's set up for business transactions. But someone described it to me as walking in to someone's business on the high street, going in, let's say it's a vape shop, and just screaming, I don't need any vapes. And then kind of going, okay, and walking back out. It's the same. I think it's the same as commenting on someone's social page that you don't like of a vape because you don't vape. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Agreed. Look, at the end of the day, if you're following someone, it is a choice and you are choosing to follow that person. I think obviously with regards to dealing with kind of, I guess you're referring to more negative or more hateful comments and stuff like that on Instagram, obviously that comes with a following. Like there's always going to be a bit of both. But the reality is like that person is following you by choice and you're not going to, like as an influencer, realizing you are not going to please everybody is really important, and realizing that like it's not going to be for everyone. And if someone is coming on and doing that repeatedly, you know, you have to monitor it. But I think it is sad. It's sad that people just feel really entitled to have this voice because they're sitting behind a screen. I think there's something about being behind the screen that makes them feel more powerful. Because if they were, I've actually had instances where, and I don't really do it much, but sometimes if it's like a really snarky comment or something, I'll just like reply back and they're like, oh my God, I love you. No, no, no. And it's just proof. Like they're all kind of tough and wanting to start the thing. And as soon as I give them like a little thing, they're like, oh, that was a joke. You know,
because they realize there's another human being behind there.
It is.
I think when you've never met someone in person and you see someone just in a feed, you inevitably treat them slightly different. You treat them lower than say another human being that you sit next to.
Yeah. And all it's like these aliens on social media that we'll never see or touch or be near. And we're so unrelatable to, but it is that kind of, I think, behind the screen thing that gives people a little bit of an extra, like, I can be mean or I can say what I want. And yeah, okay, freedom of speech. But if you're sitting there sending all these things to someone, still following them, It's like, what are you doing? No, like, just unfollow. Like, you're wasting your
time. Okay, on that, and it brings us quite nicely onto to something else I wanted to cover, is with social media, there is that inevitable feeling that you are revealing big parts of your life to certain people. When it's just friends and family following you, it's slightly different. But when there's all sorts following you, and probably every one of us has random people who you're not quite sure who they are, but they follow you. And if you're not that bothered, you let them. And I know you've had a really bad experience of someone who you didn't necessarily want to follow you. But I'm not going to take it too much further, because I know it's something that you probably want to address and talk about. But you've seen the really dark side of social media and the revealing of certain personal details that compromise your own personal safety, that people often don't realize when they're flicking Instagram and posting details of their lives.
Yeah. Essentially a couple years ago, God, it's been a couple years already. I had a stalker who was kind of, you know, following me for about 3 years, consistently every single day, comments, messages to my friends, to my boyfriend, to his family, to, like, you know, all kinds of different, like, all the different circles of my life, and went on consistently for 3 years. So it was.
When you say following, sorry, just to clear up, following on, this is following you around on Instagram or?
On Instagram and Twitter and Facebook.
Okay.
So all the, you know, kind of all the platforms, but at first, and again, this is the thing with the following, you know, that there's going to be the odd, you know, especially as a girl, like, I generally tend to get, like, more messages from men, like, it's just kind of how it is. And you get, you know, that was an experience for me where I was at first kind of, you know, whatever, just ignore it. He'll go away. And obviously, you know, 3 years later, still hadn't gone away. So went to the police, and they, you know, took it very, very seriously. And it's actually still kind of in process. The trial hasn't actually gone to trial yet. It's been, like, obviously everything with, you know, courts and stuff takes really long. But yeah, that was a really dark side of social media, because it's...
Sorry to interrupt you, Shah. Can you just tell us why he was different to other people that might be following you because I know you get quite a lot of comments from different people, but just explain, I think people should know what the difference in his types of comments.
Yeah, sorry I'll, to try, interrupt. I'll try and summarize it my best. No, because I'm trying to, like, concise. Mm. It's a very long story, but essentially it was, you know, comments every single day about, you know, being in love with me and we're meant to be together and, you know, we're going to spend the rest of our lives together and things like that really just kind of took it past that point of, like, this isn't just like a, you're so pretty or you're this or you're that. It was, like, really kind of getting weird. And throughout the course of the 3 years, there were references to my job where I worked, to my uni at the time. He knew where I went to university, things like that, where I lived. Obviously having my sister Jeannie, who's hugely, you know, in the spotlight, that kind of amped it up, and he found out information through things. And essentially it was just that, like, obsessive, the nature of the comments were very obsessive and very kind of, like, relentless and ruthless, and sometimes negative and sometimes degrading, and, like, a whole, like, you could imagine. Mm. I'd say 50 comments a day for 3 years. So it was like massive. And at the beginning I was, you know, ignoring it. This will go away. Didn't go away. So I started screenshotting everything. And my dad had told me, you know, just take pictures of everything. We'll go to the police with this. This is serious. If this doesn't let up. At the time I was, the last year of it, I was living in London. So I was kind of like, if this, you know, goes away on its own, maybe it'll just fizzle out. But I had to move back to Montreal the next year, and my fear was moving back. And when it gets to a point where you're actually scared for your safety, and I think that's a really important thing also with, you know, kind of more micro influencers, is, like, I'm not equipped. I don't have security guards. I don't walk around with a whole team of people that can protect me. Like, Montreal is my city. I walk around alone. I walk around at night. I feel safe. I know it, you know, like the back of my hand. And it got to the point where I was dreading moving back, because I was like, I won't even feel safe going to school. I won't even feel safe going to work. So when it gets to that point where you've actually, you know, your safety and security is in question, you have to take it to the next step. You know, it is serious. And that's what I did. And the police took it very, very seriously and, you know, did what they had to do and tracked him down and all of that. And it's been a long process. But for me, the biggest thing was just speaking about it and not being scared to just, and accepting to just keep being the victim. I think that's really hard sometimes, especially if you're, you know, for girls who are maybe younger and more influential, and it's often older, like older men, and that can be really scary and really intimidating. You're like, I don't want to speak out. I don't want him to come after me and all these things. And I think just being honest with yourself and saying, look, I'm a victim. I don't have to keep being a victim. I need to deal with this properly. And, you know, one thing I wanted to highlight with that whole thing was, you know, if it can even just help one person who's feeling abused, or, you know, you don't have to be abused online. Yes, as an influencer, you are putting certain aspects of your life out there. 100%. That's part of it. But I'm still like, I feel like I'm still a pretty private person in sense of like, I won't really put like locations or things like that. And since this whole thing, I've really, really, really changed how I post when I'm out. Like, I'll still post where I went, but hours later when I'm not there anymore, things like that, you know? So, yeah, I feel like I'm rambling on. Do you guys
No. It's interesting. I think it's something that the police probably 10, 15 years ago would be horribly unequipped to deal with, because it's so new. And like all these technologies, they bring on also.
Yeah.
Bring on,
definitely. Yeah. They are all new types of cases, and you hear it all the time, like, you know, different outcomes, and because they're the first time trials, people are really interested to see what happens.
They had never seen or heard of anything like this before. Yeah, they couldn't believe it. They were like, so, but obviously with technology, you know, you can track IP addresses and things like that. So, yeah, it was baffling for them. It was baffling for me. It was kind of the first case like this, and it picked up some press. So then it kind of, you know, spread around Canada. And I just really, really wanted to hit home on the point that, like, you know, you don't have to be a victim to this. Even if you are an influencer and you're putting things out there, like, you don't deserve to be getting attacked every single day personally for what?
So, and it's really interesting. And thanks for sharing. How would you deal with it apart from the taking it to court? How did you deal with it when it came to, you know, I know he visited your work whilst you were in Montreal, or whilst you weren't, I can't remember, but equally just as scary, and also saw or had recognized one of your friends, and your friend actually was in that place. So I think I remember those two being the scariest moments. But I guess, you know, apart from deciding to take this forward and really pursue it, which you clearly had no choice by this time, what were you kind of doing to, or what would you say to someone else that's going through something where they're not sure whether it's bad enough to take to the police or...
Yeah. I think, well, for me at first with this, I started just blocking everything. So it started off, you know, comments. And I would just block it because it just was annoying. It was every time I opened the app, it was 100 new comments and just himself having conversations with himself and just feeding off of any other comment that anyone would post. And so I started blocking. And every time I blocked, a new account would come up. So, and I knew it was the same, you know, it was the same. There's zero followers, not following anyone, a weird obscure picture, things like that. I could tell it was the same person, and I probably ended up blocking about 30 accounts on, you know.
Do you think it got worse?
I think it got, well, it did get worse actually, because at first, I was blocking it, and then he actually like took that as some form of acknowledgement, which it is, you know, I'm acknowledging you and I'm blocking you. And that started becoming a thing. It was like, oh, she's noticing me. Because I had never, ever replied to anything he had sent. Like, I know I said sometimes I'll clap back at someone. This person, I had never, ever, ever replied to him. It was just complete radio silence for me. And so the blocking. And then finally, I was like, what do I do? I can't block him. It's giving him attention. What do I do? So that's when my dad and I... realized the severity of this, and we were like, you just completely radio silence, just start screenshotting everything, compile a bunch of pictures, we'll bring it to the police. But that, you know, that also just, you block and then you get another, you block me another. And I think sometimes, like you said, how did I know to take it to the police? Like, my case was pretty extreme, and I don't think no two cases will be the same. But I think the biggest thing is if you actually feel like your security is threatened, that's serious enough. So it doesn't have to be 50 messages every day for 3 years. but it can be that you feel like you are nervous to walk outside alone, and that's enough. You know, that's enough. So it really depends on the person and your own, you know, personal threshold. Obviously 3 years was a really long time, but I just became numb to it. I just was like, okay, screenshot, put it in a folder, ignore. And, but I never entertained it. So that's also crazy, because you think like, if I gave him an inch, he'd take a mile. I didn't even give him an inch. Yeah. It was.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And thank you for sharing, because I appreciate it. It's quite a sensitive and personal topic, but we want to move it forward, and all the stuff you've said on social media and anxiety and dealing with all the negatives that come with it has been fantastic. And we thought it'd be quite a nice way to end would just be to get your best bits of advice for dealing with these very bits. So your top tip for dealing with anxiety and social media.
Anxiety to do with social media?
Yeah, anxiety as a result of social media interaction.
For me, the biggest help is nature. It's the biggest contrast to it. And I think it might not be for everybody. For me, that is where I'm grounded, no phone, no distraction. Obviously, if you have access to it, it's easier than not. But just that, just turning it off, just having some me time and brain time and not getting wrapped up in it.
Yeah, perfect. Dealing with negativity on social media. I might not be talking necessarily about the extremes of a stalk, yeah, or a complete nut job, but more in just everyday negativity, because it's full of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think influencer or no influencer, you're going to get that. There's always going to be some of that. So I think just realizing that if you're, as an influencer, if you have your following, you're not, you know, accepting that you're not going to please everybody, accepting that not everybody's going to like you, and that you will get some of those comments, but also that says more about the person writing the comment themselves than it does about you. So I think focusing on just who's writing this, who's taking the time out of their day to write this to me, that says a lot more about that person than it does about me.
Yeah. 100%.
Okay. And final bit, you're going to hate answering this, I think, but top tip for an aspiring influencer.
Oh boy. No, you know what? I've said it before and I'll say it again. It's always just authenticity. It's just being yourself, because at the end of the day, anyone can become an influencer. That's kind of the beauty of it, is that you can if you want, and if you want to have a stage to speak and say things, but sticking true to who you are, that's the most important thing, because that is what sets you apart from all the other influencers out there. That's the only thing that we all have that's unique to us.
I can't imagine trying to live two lives. Living one life is complicated enough, but having to have an online persona and an in-person persona would be
and you have to maintain the two. Oh, it's just
I know
yourself.
It's so difficult. Okay, no,
I'll tell you what,
mix in your like, I kind of have fun with that. I'm not such a serious influencer, like I do a little bit on the side, but just mixing in, you know, a bit of like your normal life, personal life, and that I think just keeps it really unique, so that not every single post is a paid post, because nobody wants to follow that.
Yeah. No, great. Okay, perfect. Well, Lex, unless you got anything else,
I was just going to ask basically your tips and tricks for general anxiety and any time you felt down, because that is essentially what you know, a lot of people listen to the podcast for. It's to kind of just share lots of ideas, and so anything you've got to add from what you've got would be great.
Recently, I think over the last year, I've become pretty big on having a morning routine, and I think that is something that has really helped me just kind of start my days, and just start my days with a clear head. And especially if you've just woken up and gone on your phone, it's like you miss that kind of window. So really having that routine before you go on your phone. And for me, it's a bit of reading, a lot of writing, and meditation. And I think the most therapeutic and useful one for me is the writing, because I just go, I just write, scribble, whatever's on my mind, whatever I'm thinking. And then it gives me a sense of I've put this somewhere, so I can now focus on other things and not worry about having to still deal with this in my mind. So I think with anxiety and with anything, ups and downs of life, I think I'm a really, really strong advocate for writing. I just think it really helps you just lay everything on the table. It gives you peace of mind, and just having that time. So I think I know everyone's some people are the 5 a.m. morning routine club, whatever. Your morning routine is what you make it. And I also think if you can't do it right away in the morning, that doesn't mean it's done for the day. I often find myself, sometimes I'll do it at 3 p.m. because I forgot to do it in the morning, or I didn't have time.
You're the 11 a.m. club, aren't you, Shah?
I Yes, I am. But I even if I do it, sometimes I've done it at night before because I'm just like, it doesn't, like, obviously it's helpful when you start your day with it, but I think even just getting it in is so important, and finding that routine of like having that time with yourself, having that meditation, having that quiet time. So obviously ideally in the morning, but if it's later and you're kind of like, oh, screw it, do it, you know, give it that time. Just, you know, it's helpful. It's really, really been beneficial for me. And I think it can seem tedious. It can seem long. It can seem annoying. Nobody wants to sit there and write with a pen, and I'm old fashioned. I like having my book. I don't write on a computer, but it has truly helped me with my mental clarity and headspace.
Well, it makes a lot of sense because it's actually, it's kind of a bit like worry time, which is what Sam in our first season, who's an NHS mental health worker, you know, she talked about writing down all the things that your worries and then coming back to them later. And I just think it clearly is, we've heard it a couple of times, but I think you put it so well there. So no, thanks. And got anything else
no,
to say?
No, that's great. Char, thank you very much for joining us. And also thank you for sharing. I think you're talking to two hosts who are, let's just say, not very good with social media and probably terrible people to ask.
Trying.
Yeah, we're trying. We're trying for the sake of the podcast. But thanks for joining us.
You guys are doing well. No, thanks for having
hopefully,
me.
And hopefully speak to you soon. Thanks, Char.
Yeah,
that was awesome. Good. Thanks.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Mindfield Pod. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and get in touch. We all have our own minefields, and we hope that this podcast goes some way to helping you navigate yours.